Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today I really am very pleased to have as my guest somebody who's going to talk to us a little bit about the elections in Britain, which I think are very, very important for what happens here. For our listeners, just a little bit of background. First of all, we had the Brexit election in Britain, where Britain voted to get out of the European Union and go it alone. And that happened right before the election of Donald Trump in 2016. Then we had last year, the voters in Britain voted out the incumbent conservative government, where inflation played a big role. And then months later, the voters here voted out the Democratic administration for similar reasons. What's really interesting for our listeners in this area is what's called the Red Wall in Britain. And our guest today is an expert on that. We got the Blue Wall here in the United States, which, of course, refers to Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. But also, I think in our area, as listeners know, and I've said a million times, we're the heart of Obama-Trump country, of working class voters. So my guest today has written extensively about this, two books. She's played an important role in the Labor Party in researching this crucial element of voters called working class voters. Her name is Deborah Mattinson. She's the author of, first of all, Talking to a Brick Wall, Why New Labor Stopped Listening to the Voter and Why We Need New Politics. That's an older book, 2010. The latest one she wrote was 2020, Beyond the Red Wall, Why Labor Lost, How the Conservatives Won, and What Will Happen Next. Sorry for the long introduction, but Deborah, thank you so much for taking the time to be my guest today.
Absolute pleasure.
So, I think for the best way to start out is to, for you to describe your background in politics, what you do in opinion research, and what your role has been with the Labour Party.
Of course. Okay, so the first election that I worked on was in 1987, a long, long, long time ago, where I had had a background in advertising and communications, and I worked through that election providing sort of communications advice to the then leader of the Labour Party, Neil Kinnock. We lost. He went on to fight another election in 1992. And by then I was working effectively full time in a consultancy that advised Labour. And we went on then to win in 97. I advised the Labour Party through the whole of its time in government, working mainly with the then Chancellor of the Exchequer, Gordon Brown, who became the Prime Minister. I left after that and then, you know, became more of a kind of commentator and observer and wrote the book that you kindly mentioned, Beyond the Red Wall, after that all happened. And after that, Keir Starmer, who had become the leader of the Labour Party, asked me to go back and work in Labour as his director of strategy, and I stayed with that project. I'd always seen my project as, you know, getting him over the line, getting him into number 10 Downing Street, which is easier said than done. I mean, basically, at the time when I started working for him, we were 12 points behind in the polls. So it wasn't by any means a shoo-in, but we did it. And then since then, well, he very kindly put me in our House of Lords, which is our second chamber. So I now sit as a working peer, a Labour Party peer in the House of Lords.
You've been a constant, pretty much throughout this entire time,
I
where
have.
Britain has experienced the same thing the United States has with the educational divide of working class voters, defined as those without college degrees, having a major role in elections and switching their voting patterns. Your specific specialty is in opinion research, and I found it very fascinating, some of the tactics and methods you use. Could you share a little bit of about that and how that played a major role, I guess, in informing the candidates you helped?
Absolutely. I mean, the techniques we use have evolved a lot in the time that I've been working. But some things are always constant. You need numbers, you need polls, and we obviously have a lot of them now. They're much cheaper to do. And there are many, many players in, both sides of the pond doing this work. But the other thing that I think is incredibly important is the qualitative research, the so-called focus groups, where, I find you can get a really in-depth sense of where voters are. So the poll will tell you 70% of people think this or that, but you need the focus group to tell you why. And that's what it does, and to understand how those voters talk about their experience in their own words. And I just think that's invaluable. And you have to use both together, of course.
We could do an entire show on focus groups because some of the questions
Yes.
you asked I thought were very interesting, but I don't want to. I want to make sure we get to the
Yes.
major themes
Yeah.
today. But okay, for one more background question before we get into the meat of this. But what describe the Red Wall area? And for our listeners, I think this will sound somewhat familiar to you.
Yes, it will sound somewhat familiar. And in fact, conducting, as I have done recently, some work here, in where you are in the US, I've had so many flashbacks to that period where I was researching the Red Wall. I'd been doing a series of focus groups for an organization called the Progressive Policy Institute in DC, who share my fixation actually with working class voters and how they feel about their lives. And it's a very, very, very similar story of a group of people who feel left behind is probably the best way of describing it. Very often in our Red Wall, like your blue wall, it's post-industrial towns who feel that they're not part of the political debate. They feel that the kind of deal that they struck with the state, where you work hard, you do everything you've been told to do, and then you're paid a fair living wage, no longer works for them. And they feel a deep, deep sense of unfairness. And I would say I've also recently, for the PPI, also done some work in Germany following their election, which was just a few weeks ago, and we found exactly the same story. In fact, you could almost play, looking at the focus groups, you could play quote bingo, where you pick out a quote and you have to guess, was this something that somebody said in Brandenburg? Was it something that somebody said in Pittsburgh? Was it something that somebody said in Accrington or Stoke? Because they're saying exactly the same things. And if politicians don't listen, they're going to be in real trouble.
Give us a little geography lesson just where London is located, which is kind of emblematic of the big city voters that
Yes,
we have here,
yes.
and then where the Red Wall is located.
So London is in the southeast bottom of the country. If you imagine in your head a map of Great Britain, it looks a bit like a sort of long triangle, with a blobby bit at the top that's Scotland, which is also very important electorally.
Yep.
And the Red Wall is like a sort of spine that runs from, I guess, from the bottom of the Midlands, bottom of the middle of the country, right up into the north and the northwest, and into North Wales. And it is those places that are former mining communities, often post, were a place where there would be lots of factories where you made things that you often don't do anymore. Very similar sorts of people to the people in exactly those blue wall states that you would talk about. Very similar backgrounds. Typically, they were people in our country who had voted Brexit as well. So that brings with it a whole bunch of attitudes. And they didn't feel that they had abandoned the Labour Party, although they were lifelong Labour voters. They felt the Labour Party had abandoned them. And that's the kind of story that I've been hearing in the US about the Democrats too, where I heard again and again people saying the Democrats used to be for working people and they're not anymore.
That's exactly what I hear around here,
You
in
would,
this area,
absolutely. You
because
absolutely would.
the county where I live is an Obama Trump county.
Yeah,
So absolutely hear that.
exactly.
So these labor voters, which are kind of similar to our old Democratic voters, they switched over. Tony Blair, which I think a lot of our listeners are familiar with, was prime minister for a number of years, and then Brown. But then they th
Yes.
these voters began to switch in the election when Brown was up, correct? Can you kind of talk about their
Well,
shift then?
yeah, I mean, actually, to be honest, when you look at the numbers, some of those voters had started to peel away at the end of Blair's own prime ministerial career. So 2005, Labour lost seats. I mean, not bad. It was the third election win on the trot, but Labour started to lose seats. We don't have the same two election rule that you have, well, you have at the moment anyway here. So Tony Blair was able to run three times, and Gordon Brown took over after that. We then lost more seats, but we really sort of hemorrhaged them after Jeremy Corbyn became the leader of the Labour Party and shifted the whole party's axis further to the left, in a whole bunch of different ways, in a way that these voters had no truck with.
I think one of the interesting things I saw in your book was when you talked about Boris Johnson's scheme of leveling up, which I thought was an interesting theme. It meant bringing the places left behind, bringing them up, which I thought that was a creative line anyway. But talk about how Red Wall voters saw that. I mean, here they talk about making the pie bigger. Is that the same as how they saw it?
Well, so basically, I think people see this in those red wall areas as a bit of a zero-sum game. They think that they can't win unless somebody else loses. So whilst the idea of making the pie bigger across the piece is attractive, it's not very credible to those voters. And this was the flaw in the levelling up. I mean, I don't think that's why Boris Johnson won, by the way. I don't, it was an interesting idea, but one that he didn't follow through anyway. But I think that for Labour, there was a sense that Labour had focused its energies on the big cities and the people who were doing much better in those big cities, particularly in London, in Manchester, in Edinburgh, people who were graduates, people who were working in very, very different fields to the fields that these Red Wall voters were working in. And they felt they were missing out. And they felt that the Labour Party didn't listen to them at all. You then get a bit of a debate about, is this an economic issue or is it a cultural issue? I actually think it's an economic issue, but I think where the culture wars piece kicks in is when people think that their politicians are ignoring them and their needs and out of touch with their needs and focusing on people who are different from them, be it well-off graduates living in the cities. And certainly, in this period, Labour was defined as the party of the well-off graduates living in places like London, not of working class people living in these industrial towns. But I think we heard it a bit with the Democrats too, focusing on, there was one quote that really struck me from one of the focus groups that I did in the US, where somebody had said, the thing is, Trump is maybe looking out for working people, but the Democrats are looking after all those minorities, and they're nothing to do with me, and I don't understand them. And this, of course, became Trump's attack, and it was a very effective attack.
Yes. You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm very delighted to have as my guest Deborah Mattinson, who's the author of two books, but is an opinion research strategist in British politics. She's been there really present at the creation, so to speak, of all the upheaval we've had in our politics over the last 2 decades. We've talked a little bit about just kind of setting the stage for what's been going on over there and how similar it is to what's happened in the United States. And I think a very interesting point you made, I want to emphasize, is the changes here started happening before Trump, before Brexit. It really, yes. We saw some of the changes in the United States starting in 2012 and 2014. I found a very interesting quote.
I agree.
And I'm not even going to try to pronounce this gentleman's last name. He's a Tory strategist. Here's the quote. The economics that had driven those places to group together was being replaced by a cultural sense of belonging that was more proximate to the conservatives. You know, in the United States, we've always thought that economic issues trump cultural issues. You know, James Carville's famous, it's the economy, stupid.
Yeah.
That almost sounds like that in with working class voters, that cultural issues are trumping economic issues. Is that what he meant? And what do you think about that?
Well, so what he meant, as I said earlier, I think in the end, it is the economy, stupid. I do think that. And I think James, he's called James Kanagasorium, actually.
Thank you.
It was him who first came up with the concept of the Red Wall. And I interviewed him, as you'll have seen, for my book about it, because I thought he had such an interesting point of view. He did big data analysis. So he was sitting in Tory Party HQ, and he was looking at all of the data that they had. And he suddenly saw this pattern. And what he saw was that when you looked at the cultural attitudes of some of these people that had been considered to be very diehard Labour voters, they actually had more in common with Conservatives. And it was him who first said, there is a very interesting pattern here. We can actually win these people in these places like Stoke and places in the Midlands where they're all ex-miners, and which would have been unheard of. I mean, these were all, you know, constituencies that the Labour Party had held for decades and decades, almost since its conception. And he identified that. And I think that was right. And I think it was a very, very interesting take. But I also think that the cultural views that they expressed, which were things like being very concerned about immigration, for example, were born out of a sense of unfairness that they were working hard and they were not getting a just reward economically for their hard work. And then that played out in other areas of their lives, housing, for example. And this is a great example of a quote. Now, this quote, I have heard the same quote in Germany, endlessly in the UK, and now endlessly in the US. And it's somebody saying, basically, you know, my son can't get a flat. He works very hard. He works all the hours that God sends. He's got nowhere to live. Immigrants come over here and they are immediately given decent places to live. That's not fair. And that's the kind of sentiment that I'm talking about. Now, you know, to my mind, that is actually in the end a plea for a different economic contract rather than a cultural contract. But the cultural view is triggered by this sense of unfairness that comes out of the fact that the economy isn't working for people like that anymore. It used to be. They used to be doing jobs that were well paid. If you were working in a car factory in Illinois, you got a decent living. Now that factory may have closed down. What are you going to be doing? A lot of them are not working in the manufacturing industry anymore. They're working in the gig economy. They're earning very little. They're working. I mean, I don't know how many times, again, quotes from Germany, from the UK, from the US, talking about people working multiple jobs just to make ends meet at the end of the week, at the end of the month. Similar stories again and again and again.
In your book, you gave some advice for Labour to win back these voters. I thought that was very, very interesting. And before we get to what actually happened in the election, can you share a couple of the major points you made in the book on how Labour needed to go about getting these voters back? I think the question was, I liked the way you phrased it, were Labour voters lent to the Tories to get Brexit done, or will Conservatives be able to hang on to them? But your advice for getting them back in the Labour.
So, I mean, I think the first thing that I said, and it was the first thing that I did when I started working for Keir Starmer, you have to have those voters front of mind. You have to focus on them entirely. The first thing that I did was to commission a very big piece of research and then segment the population by attitudes, by voting behaviour. And we came up with a group of voters who I think you couldn't win an election without winning back. And we called them hero voters. Now, we called them hero voters because it was so important that the politicians that I was initially speaking to had these people in their in you know the front of their minds, and they showed these people that they respected them again, because that is what people felt, that not only had the Labour Party walked away from them, but the Labour Party looked down their nose at them. The Labour Party judged them adversely. The Labour Party didn't like their views. The Labour Party thought it knew better, and all of that had to change. And so I said, put these people front of mind, put the economy front of mind. Show some strong leadership, take on your party, be prepared to say to the party, no, it's not going to be like this, it's going to be like this. And that is what Keir Starmer did, to his absolute credit. He came from one of those families. His dad worked with his hands. His dad was a toolmaker. And he got it. He really got it. Keir Starmer, as he grew up, was somebody who remembered his parents' telephone being cut off because they couldn't pay the bill. He got it. So although he'd then gone on, because he's a very smart guy and he'd been very successful in his life and was a very successful lawyer, he never forgot where he'd come from.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Is part of its policy? I mean, in the United States, we've got this debate, and as the Democratic Party right now goes through this process of figuring out why they lost and trying to get things back together for the future. And there's a debate whether it's policy or whether it's message. Was your feeling
Interesting.
that it was labor had the right policies? It was just they needed to fine-tune their message, do a better job communicating, or did they need to change their policies actually?
So, I mean, this is in a way, this is the $64,000 question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yet, I don't know that it's either or. I spoke to the guy who did my job in Germany. And I asked him why he thought they had lost. And he said, I think it is because we lost the emotional connection with working class voters. And he said, whenever I said we haven't got this connection anymore, people would come up with a policy solution. Now, a policy can be illustrative of the fact that you have that connection, but in the end, you do have to make that connection. Now, in the US, I would say that Donald Trump did a much better job than Kamala Harris did of channeling the anger that those voters felt. And in doing so, he made that emotional connection. And that is what has to happen. Of course, you need to have the right policy in place. Of course you do. Of course you need to have the right communications, or it won't, or your policy and your message won't reach the voters that you need to reach. But in the end, it's about having that emotional connection. That is what Labour had lost. That is what I think the Democrats had lost. And that is what the SPD lost in Germany, too.
Okay, so let's get to the election. Starmer was victorious. It was a very strong victory. I've read a little bit about this, but not enough to have an informed opinion. But I'm curious, did he do better in the red wall areas? I thought I'd read something where turnout was down or whatever, but did he capture back some of the red wall voters enough to make a big difference here?
Okay, well, yes, he did. You have to work with the electoral system that you have. And in the UK, we have a system where you have to win a certain number of constituencies to win. So it doesn't matter how many votes you win. If you're piling up votes in places where you don't need them because they're not going to win you any more constituencies, it doesn't matter. The beauty of working with this hero voter strategy and targeting them was that we won those votes where we needed to win them. So what we did was to have a very, very well economically distributed vote share across a lot of constituencies. So we won 411 seats. It was massive. We've got a massive majority. It is fair to say a lot of those within each constituency, the majority that we have in that constituency is often quite small. So that's what now needs to be built on. But actually, I think we did exactly the right thing in focusing in the way that we did.
What are the lessons for Democrats here in the States? We've got about a couple minutes left here.
Yeah. So I think the key lesson is understand who your hero voters are. And I think it is going to be very similar to ours. It's going to be basically, the terminology gets confusing because it doesn't exactly translate across. It's what we would call working class. You might call them more middle class voters. I think they might call themselves middle class, but it's basically people as a kind of shorthand. It's people who are not college graduates, who are tending to work with their hands, who are struggling financially, feel the pinch financially, worried even if they own their homes that their children will not be able to do so. There's a whole collection of attitudes and lifestyle elements of those voters which I think are very clear, and I think that's where the Democrats need to refocus. It's where they used to be, and they need to take ownership again of that group of voters.
I'm going to squeeze in another question here real quick. The question I keep getting, the trans issue, for example, was the way the Republicans used it was very powerful here. Do you have that type of issue arise there? And again, I get back to the culture versus economic issues. So if a candidate's got a strong economic platform, it can overcome stances that are fairly progressive on issues like that and say crime and immigration.
Yes, and we have exactly the same parallel here. I think that the problem is not so much, I mean, in my experience, people both in the US and in the UK are quite tolerant and quite live and let live about other people's lives. But what they don't want to do is to see their politicians spending all their time focusing on that group of people. Most ordinary voters won't know anybody who's trans and will feel that it's a very minority interest, and they want to have politicians focus on the things they're worried about. So it's not that they discriminate against or they're hostile towards certain groups of people. They just don't want them sucking up all the political oxygen.
Final question, Deborah. I've got to ask this. Do you plan? Is there another book in your future?
Yes, I think that there will be, although
Good.
I haven't yet decided what on, and nor have I had time to write it, but I will.
Well, your two books so far have been outstanding, and for our listeners, I recommend them both. The older one is Talking
Thank
to a
you.
Brick Wall, How New Labor Stopped Listening to the Voter and Why We Need a New Politics. The more recent one is Beyond the Red Wall, Why Labor Lost, How the Conservatives Won, and What Will Happen Next. And Deborah shared today what did happen next, which has been delightful. We ran out of time. I have more questions. Maybe I can have you back at some point. It would be delightful to have
Definitely.
you. It was delightful to have you today, and I'd love to have you back sometime. Deborah Mattinson's been my guest today on Heartland Politics. Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at wvik.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.